This is The Topic is Trek, episode 0 for June 30th, 2017. The Genesis Effect. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everybody. This is Clinton Allward here, and this is the very first episode of a brand new Star Trek podcast based on all the old Star Trek podcasts. No, I have no idea if that's true. The three of us, and I'll do some introductions in a moment, although minus one this evening, we're kicking around the idea of doing a Star Trek podcast, and we said, sure, let's go ahead and do it. So we're trying to figure out all the ins and outs of how the show is going to work. So you're kind of along for the journey. So you are the red shirts, or we are the red shirts, or we're all the red shirts, I guess, for this first episode. And let's get to the introductions already. As I mentioned, I'm Clinton Allward. You may know me from such podcasts as Comedy Forecast. And that's it. Also with me are...
Hi, I'm Chuck Tomasi. I'm from Technorama and a few other podcasts. I've been around the podosphere for a while and co-author of Podcasting for Dummies, third edition's coming in fall of 2017. Don't miss it. Oh, I need the desk bell. There we go.
Got the plug in. And the third member of our holy triad here, Craig Stepp, is not able to be with us.
How many Quattlers did he win?
20 Quattlus. And so he will not be here for our launch, if you will, although that's where we're calling this episode zero.
The Genesis Effect. I love it because we're using proto matter and this show is highly unstable.
Yeah, well, so are the people that are hosting it. But anyway, we're going to start off with some subspace chatter. It's our news section.
Wait, we need a sound effect or something in here. There. That teletype effect, doesn't it?
This just in
from the subspace at 300 baud.
So let's see what's happening in the Trek universe. I'll start things off with some exciting news. Star Trek Discovery will actually launch in September. Reading from an article in AV Club, despite early indications that the show would premiere earlier this year, Star Trek Discovery has remained docked for much of 2017 as producers and network executives worked to ensure its quality before launch. With the first trailer now out, though, CBS is ready to engage as Deadline reports Discovery will hit the small and smaller screens. Well, that's depressing. On Sunday, September 24th. The series premiere will be broadcast on CBS as well as made available on All Access, the iNetwork streaming platform and future home of the series. I believe the first episode is actually going to be two episodes, and they'll both air the same evening.
Okay.
And then episodes after that will be airing exclusively on All Access in the United States and pretty much Netflix every place else. So how we were so lucky that we have to subscribe to another service, I don't know.
Yeah, and that got a lot of grief when this was first announced. You had mentioned Netflix. Is that just joking around, or is that for real?
I believe in Europe, in most of the world, it will be Netflix. I don't think Canada is getting it on Netflix. I that may be in this article.
But I wonder if they're going to do like what they do with A&E shows and show them a season later.
Where you can
watch Walking Dead or what some networks will release their stuff, but it's it's a season late or as the new season is about to begin, they want to generate interest, so they release the previous season.
No, on Netflix, they're getting, because I think they're also funding. They're kicking in some money for this. So they bought the distribution rights, and so they will have it. But the other part of the story that dropped when they announced that the show was starting is we're already into the, I'll call the Battlestar Galactica or sci-fi channel effect, that we're going to split the first season into two parts.
Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah, the first eight episodes are going to start in September, on September 24th, and go through November 5th. And then we'll have to wait until, I believe it's January, very early in 2018.
That gives all the nerds water cooler talk over the holidays.
It does, it does. And I think we're all pretty much under the assumption that the reason they're splitting it up like this is because of all the work they're going to be doing on special effects.
Yeah, and that's what the article says. They've got some post-production left, which is encouraging that they're giving it that level of attention.
Well, if you saw the trailer that they came out with, that, again, is being alluded to here, very cinematic approach to it. So the effects are definitely going to be on the high end for the show. And so I think that that's just going to take a little. It's not the guy drawing in the little laser beam with a Sharpie.
Pew, pew, pew.
It's a lot harder to draw with a Sharpie on the negative when it's shot digitally anyway. So they had to do some other workaround for that.
And yeah, I think that's the level of expectation that the viewers have these days, is they're not going to settle for, you know, substandard special effects. The bar is pretty high with audiences these days. I was noticing in the trailer, I assume this is the Klingons with the bumpy forehead and the Spider-Man costume.
Yes. And so now we get into probably a bit of the thing we're going to be dealing with later on. So let's dog ear. Let's see what I did there for right now. And I think we'll get back to that very shortly.
Okay.
But we'll move on to our second story. Do you want to take this one, Chuck?
I will. This is from sci-fi.com. And Star Trek alum returns to direct upcoming episode of Discovery. You can tell there's a lot of Discovery talk going on here because it's what's hot. Because the topic is Trek.
That's a great name.
We're going to turn that into a drinking game somehow. The Star Trek universe is vast and versatile. Its alumni include veteran performers like William Shatner and Sir Patrick Stewart. Oh, that was more of a Sean Connery, sorry.
I'm waiting for you to do the next two.
As well as Whoopi Goldberg and Kate Mulgrew. I can only go downhill from there. Sorry. CBS All Access is tapping into that rich talent pool for the new series, Star Trek Discovery. I hope they have a cool theme song and they don't sing.
Yeah, no singing. No Jonathan, Rod Stewart covers.
Jonathan Frakes, whom we all know played Commander William T. Riker on Star Trek The Next Generation, is reporting for duty. This time he'll put in work behind the camera. Executive producer Gretchen J. Berg explained, quote, "He's a fantastic, what a wonderful guy."
He's marvelous.
I watched Blazing Saddles earlier this week. What a swell guy. She says, "He's a fantastic guy and a great director." Co-showrunner Aaron Harberts chimed in, "Our cast is dying to work with him." Who could blame them? Frakes Commander Riker has been a notable presence in booth, film, and television for 30 years.
Wow, 30 years.
Be clear. This isn't a sympathy hire. Frakes has the skills to deliver. Since TNG's cancellation, he has thrived as a television director. His list of credits includes Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Voyager. Are you sensing a theme? As well as The Twilight Zone, Falling Skies, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're in for a real treat. Welcome home, Mr. Frakes. Welcome home.
I thought it was interesting how they didn't mention either of the two feature Star Trek films he directed, but...
Because I think they were going on his television directing career.
Oh, okay. But... Fair enough. I can't remember. Did Jonathan also direct episodes of The Next Generation?
I thought he did. Some of the later seasons.
I think he did as well. So we're saying he did, whether or not he did. We're now going to go to IMDb and
leave us feedback.
If it isn't in there, we're going to put it in there. So I'm sorry, whatever director directed an episode that we think he should have directed, your name's out, Jonathan Frakes is in. But I think this is a good thing to do. I mean, you want to have that association with the lineage of Star Trek?
Definitely. The universe, the continuum is very important here. And I'm sure the writers are well aware of that. The director is just as responsible for the feel, the flavor, the whole enchilada of the show.
Exactly. And he, as you know, Jonathan has a tendency to make things a bit lighter. And I think that we don't want Star Trek to be something that weighs itself down too much, because when Star Trek gets pompous, sometimes it just falls very flat, and you need to have some levity in there. And hopefully whatever leeway he has to help that happen will be a good sign as well.
Exactly. And I was thinking the same thing when I was reading a bunch of these articles this afternoon, because we prepare so far in advance for this show.
Yes.
That there's been a lot of focus on dark themes, and I'm hoping Jonathan Frakes helps to break that cycle and add some levity, like you said. But the other thing is, I forgot what I was going to say.
Fair enough. Well, while you're trying to think of that, let's move on to the next story, which is from Nerdist, and Diamond Select's Star Trek Starship Enterprise is so hot, it's on fire. This is about an exclusive product. My God, Bones, what have I done? The story reads, once upon a time, readers, there were movies in which we actually believed that big, bold, seemingly irreparable moves like destroying the signature starship of a franchise wasn't something that would just be undone by the next sequel. James T. Kirk's initial movie Enterprise may have been the first to crash, but it sure wasn't the last. Yes, don't we know that? There'll probably never be a last. Well, that's true as well. If there were no Enterprise, it went where no Enterprise has gone before, you might say, and that deserves commemoration.
So what are they commemorating here?
They are commemorating the classic scene in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Yes.
Where the Enterprise, after having been blown up in space, plummets to Earth like a meteor. And it turns a glowing red, glowing orange color.
So they're selling an orange Enterprise with burn marks on it.
Exactly.
But the saucer section's intact. This isn't canon.
Well, you'll notice that what they have on here is the collapsing of the bridge section, the main dish, before it exploded. So it's kind of a hybrid. You're getting, it's as if it just sort of imploded a bit and then plummeted into the atmosphere. It's a 14-inch model.
That's pretty big.
It is. There'll only be 400 of these made, and they're going to be at San Diego Comic-Con at a price of $65.
Ben and Keith are going to Comic-Con. I should have them pick us up one.
Exactly. We'll
put it on the show budget.
Well, I think it's translucent, so you can use it as a nightlight.
Maybe.
I suppose, if you want to read by the glow of
a burning Enterprise.
All I know about that scene that I remember the most is that we went to see the movie in the theater when it first opened, opening night.
Here it comes. I know.
And I knew that this was going to happen because I had seen trailers and watched the TV commercials. And Bonnie likes to be completely, she doesn't want to know anything about it. No spoilers.
Right,
this
right.
is long before the internet, just no spoilers. Well, she was rather upset.
She was.
Oh, she couldn't believe what she was seeing. When my wife she loved that version of the Enterprise the most.
It was a clean looking ship.
And, just all of a sudden it's exploding, and then it's exploding more, and then it's plummeting into the atmosphere, and none of that. So I guess what I'm saying is this is not going to be on the Christmas list for Bonnie to have.
He get her a toy that reminds her of one of her most upsetting Star Trek memories. Bad right. move.
This, when I saw this, I thought of you, which would be true. Absolutely true. But I don't think it's what she'd have in mind.
You just get the hour long glower.
So if you're going to Comic-Con, and I don't know how fast these will sell out, 400 does not seem an awful lot for Comic-Con.
No.
So I imagine they'll go rather quickly.
I think Nintendo had more of their NES Classic minis that they didn't make enough of.
We went to Comic-Con a couple of years ago, and I think by the time you could find the booth that they're selling these at, they'd be sold out of them. So
yeah, you're going to have to, this is one of those things. If you want it, you're going to have to line up early
or look for it on eBay the next day. One or the other
and pay three times as much. Ooh, at yes. least. Well, that's all pretty right. cool. I like commemorative little things. In fact, yeah, I can't find my Enterprise. It's around the studio somewhere. Craig gave me one and I stuck it in a cabinet or on a shelf somewhere and I just don't see it. I'll have to get that
out. I have one of mine. I've got like five of them.
Should we ever do a video of this show? Who knows?
All right. So now that we've destroyed the Enterprise, what's next on our topic?
Gone. Well, I'm bringing it up. Let me, from sciencemag.org. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yes.
Why watching Star Trek can teach you about scientific integrity. So there's an article in sciencemag.org. Get the right title here. We're giving credit where credit is due. Who says teaching about conflicts of interest, reporting bias, and research fraud needs to be dull? Fenneke Blom, the coordinator of the Netherlands Research Integrity Network, or NRIN. Sorry, they didn't. They've developed a course that teaches scientific integrity by using fragments of Hollywood movies like Awakenings, Dallas Buyers Club, Kinsey, and Extreme Measures. Blum, who teaches the VU University Medical Center here, shared her experience this week at the 5th World Conference on Research Integrity. Science Insider sat down with her to discuss the project. And there's questions why use movies to teach integrity? And can you give an example of how did students respond to this experiment, et cetera? And there was one in here.
Yep, it's
about you also used an episode of Star Trek. Why was that? She said in the 1998 episode Nothing Human, the chief physician of a spaceship creates a hologram of an exobiologist expert who he wants to consult with in order to save the life of a crew member. The consultation goes well. Until the crew member sees the expert and refuses further treatment because of his involvement in a series of experiments that killed thousands of subjects. What is the doctor to do? There's a similar discussion about science conducted under the Nazi regime. What do you do with data collected in an unethical way? The example is science fiction, but the dilemma is real and easy to imagine.
So if you recall that episode, the holographic doctor brings back another holographic doctor, not to make things too confusing, and he's a Cardassian, and he did research on like Bajorans during the occupation.
Like Dr. Mengele kind of research.
Exactly. And they're trying to save, I believe it's... B'Elanna's life. She's been attacked and is in a symbiotic kind of state with an alien creature, and they're trying to figure out how to remove it, and they need the expertise of someone in this field, and that's why this doctor is created. And of course, they give it a personality so that it's just not very robotic for the purposes of the episode.
Like Geordi's girlfriend in the holodeck.
Exactly. So you reach this point where, you know, the holographic doctor is under the dilemma of, well, am I able to benefit from this research that this Cardassian obtained through all these horrific experiments. So it really was a very much an analogy to an allegory of what happened in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a powerful episode. There's a lot of times that Voyager tended to be a little light on stuff, but this episode worked out really well, and I can see where they would use something like that.
And that's what I was going to say earlier about Discovery. I hope that they bring in some of the current events or dilemmas like that are in the public consciousness. The original series was really good about that, you know, with Loci and Beale and the white, black, white thing. And I don't know that we need to make it quite so obvious, or I'm going to leave that up to the writers, but I really hope that, that we start investigating some of these issues, such as, hey, we're going off to this planet, but there's a civil war breaking out. Well, they may be part of the Federation even. Who do we support? The rebels or the people, the establishment that's already there?
Mm. Exactly, because you have your relationship with all your deals have been struck with the people in power, and then suddenly, well, things don't seem to be quite right.
Right. There. And I think that story has been covered before.
Yeah.
Do you side with the freedom fighters? Actually, they have. I can picture, yes. Was it Picard, yeah, and what's his name in the cave? And he was talking about, you know, your George Washington wasn't so different from us. Or Beverly, that's who it was. Right. So Next Generation did cover this. But, you know, that's an example of more of the thing I would like to see is incorporating these. Hey, look, some reality show became premier of Starfleet, the president of Starfleet.
Right. And I.
Who voted for him?
Yeah, that's so weird. And I trust, because we talk about the DNA of Star Trek, and I feel like that is so ingrained in its DNA that if you don't do that, it really isn't Star Trek. You don't have to do it every episode. No, none of the shows did it every episode.
No, you need the overarching story to carry you through a season or several seasons in some cases. And then the episodic events with that blended in. Absolutely.
Okay, so let's move on to our next topic, which is about a town called Vulcan, and that's in Alberta, Canada. I think you've heard it before. They have a gift shop there with it's not the Enterprise. I'm assuming the starship's name is Vulcan that's there. It's very much, they're trying to play off of it like Riverside, Iowa does, except Riverside, Iowa kind of dedicated themselves to saying, we are the future birthplace of James T. Kirk. Vulcan said, our name is Vulcan. And they have different festivals there. Well, right now, their pool,
the public swimming pool.
Yes, their actual pool is 40 years old and it is in sad shape. So they want to build a new pool. It's going to cost the town, and the population of the town is only about 2,000 people, and it's going to cost about $3 million to do this renovation and build a new pool and the recreation area around it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to theme the pool and a little splash area in there Star Trek themed. It's actually going to have a starship that is part of this little water play area in it.
That's pretty
cool. They have a video that shows what the area would look like. And I noticed that all the colors that they use for the different accent pieces within the play area are three colors, either gold, red, or blue.
How about that?
So this weekend, they're doing a bit of a fundraiser on the July 1st, which is Canada Day. They're having an event where there'll be raffles, and they're also going to have fireworks and so forth too, as a fundraiser. I believe they've raised so far of the $3 million. The local groups have raised about $500,000.
That's not bad. It's a good start,
right? And so they'll get there when they get there. I guess the problem with the pool is that it's shifting at the bottom and the water drains out of it extremely quickly.
It's leaking 10,000 gallons a day. You think the earth is going to get a little soft?
Yeah, maybe they should just, move the pool underneath a waterfall.
Someone's going to be swimming there and a sinkhole is going to open up. I mean, that's dangerous. I'm half tempted to condemn this place before someone gets hurt. But yeah, I think it's pretty neat that they're doing this in the theme of the town. The town has adopted this. Go for it. They need to start like a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe page for it.
Yeah, I was looking, trying to see if they had anything like that. And to the best of my knowledge, to the research I was doing, I even went to the town's site. And you can find information about the pool and the project, but I didn't see any way to help fund it. I don't know whether they just haven't gotten there yet or whether they feel that's not going to be necessary. I don't know. Or they're Canadian and they're too polite to ask.
Send your check or money order. Not only is it out of town, it'd be an out of country check.
That's right. So send your loonies to and your toonies.
Transfer your Bitcoin.
It's the future. I think you should. Yeah, they don't need money in the future. So send your Bitcoin. That's right.
Send your gold pressed latinum.
No, send that to us first with a small handling fee. And
we'll start a Patreon page that only accepts strips, slips, or bars.
All righty. So if you're up in Canada, help them out.
Yep. I want to go. Now I want a road trip when it's done. Next story.
Anyways,
we're working on the smooth transitions here.
All right, we're headed from Canada off to Germany, right?
Yeah, the Star Trek Operation Enterprise coaster now open in Germany. Earlier this year, we previewed the Star Trek Operation Enterprise roller coaster attraction at Movie Park Germany. After a soft launch in May, today Movie Park officially announced the opening of what is the only licensed Star Trek coaster in the world. Hey, that sounds pretty fun. Movie Park General Manager Thorsten Backhaus states,
I love his name. That's all.
Wasn't he on Gilligan's Island? No, I'm mixing up Thurston Howell with Jim Backus.
Completely different.
We're incredibly proud of our new themed attraction. It's a roller coaster that gives guests an adrenaline rush and much more because it takes them right into the heart of Star Trek universe before the ride even begins, making them a part of the story. You're a red shirt. You're going to die.
Not a good theming for a roller coaster, then. You don't want that.
No. Riders.
But it's very cool. Go ahead.
The effects and the set look pretty cool. Riders,
it's like you're kind of going through Star Trek the experience at the beginning. You know, it's not as heavily themed,
sure,
as our beloved long lost Star Trek the experience, but you do have a section where you get to see some various props and costumes. You go through a section that is themed like it's the holodeck.
The transporter, the bridge.
Transporter pad, the bridge. Everyone is, all the staff there is in costume all the way through the attraction. Then you get on the ride, and of course, roller coasters that are themed, the theme only goes so far. So you board in an area that looks like it's a shuttle bay launch from Enterprise D, and you actually go out of an opening that looks like that. But then it's pretty much a standard roller coaster with a standard set of cars, which are themed a bit to Star Trek. So at that point, that's always when you lose the theming on stuff. If you go to Universal Orlando, you have the Incredible Hulk, and it's really great inside. You've got all these things going on, but once you get on, it's a roller coaster.
Unlike something like Men in Black, where you're in the Men in Black ride, you're in the universe, you're shooting aliens the whole time. I mean, that's not truly a roller coaster.
Right, and you do have some music. Interestingly enough, the music on this, though, is an original piece. I don't know whether they said, we don't want to pay Paramount for using that music, or Paramount and CBS every time we use it.
Kind of like this show.
Yes, or whether there might have been some other reason that they needed something of specific length to match I know a lot of times they'll try to have the soundtrack timed with what you're doing. So right, maybe it was much easier to write it that way. The roller coaster is relatively short, and I'm a roller coaster freak. I love roller coasters, but I watched this one and said, well, it's interesting that it's a case where the queue is very cool and the roller coaster is very shortly over. Yeah, I don't want to say fast, because that means it goes fast. I mean, literally, it's a very short track.
Is it a short track?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ride times out at a minute, and that involves...
Ooh, that is short.
Yeah, when you launch, the one interesting part at the beginning is you launch and you go out on the track and you go up a hill a bit, and then it goes backwards from there. So you kind of have a rocking effect to get you started. And I thought that was cool. But the ride itself is relatively short. If I was going to go to this, I think I'd be going, I just want to go through the queue, and then I'll can I just like go to the chicken exit and go back through the queue again?
The chicken exit. Cool. Where in Germany is this? I'm reading over the article over and over again. I'm not finding a location.
Let me see. I'm going to trust the internet.
Music.
Movie Park, Germany.
Yeah, we'll see if we can play a little bit of this music while you're looking. Oh, there's an embedded video in here of how they're making the music. So this may or may not be the real music. I kind of like it. This isn't the Star Trek song.
Okay, it's in Bottrop, Kitchhellen.
You made that up.
I did not. That's where it's located. And that's a hyphenation in there.
Okay, is that near anything? Someone might recognize?
Let me see. I'm going to click on the map here and try to zoom out.
Let's see. We found the concession.
There's an oil refinery, if that helps.
No.
Dorsten. It's near Dorsten. No, nothing. I'm sure it's near major cities, but not major cities that are familiar to us.
Like Frankfurt or...
Dortmund, Essen.
Okay.
Munster is relatively far away. I'm zoomed out.
Okay.
At this point,
we need someone from Germany.
Dusseldorf. It's nearish Dusseldorf, but I think that would be a hike to get there.
Okay. Well, if I'm over that way on business or otherwise, I might have to take a trip. After all, it's been 4 years since I went to the Technorama Science Center for that other show that I do.
Yes. Do you do coasters?
I do.
Oh, okay.
I do. I enjoy them. I wouldn't say I'm an Uber fanatic and have to go on every one in every park, but it's always the highlight of whatever park I'm in is to go on at least one of the good ones. I will stand in a 2-hour line or more for their best ride.
Well, I just love them. The more, the faster, the higher, the better.
Yeah. Do you prefer wooden or metal? Are you a purist? Or?
Nope. As long as it's a coaster, I'm good with it.
All right. Good to know.
So love to go to Cedar Point for all the roller coaster fans out there going, yes, Cedar Point.
I have yet to be at Cedar Point, and I used to live in Michigan, but it was like a 10-hour trek. Because the topic is track.
I get it. The topic is track, not roller coasters, but we digress all the time. So in our next story, this comes from TrekMovie.com. They had an interview with Nicholas Meyer. And in addition to talking about Star Trek Discovery's niche, where it fits in with things, he also hinted, and we say hints, at another Star Trek project.
Okay.
Let's get down to this part here. While Meyer did open up a bit to reveal the above, he also noted that he couldn't really talk about Discovery, joking he had signed the Official Secrets Act. However, and entirely unprompted, Meyer dropped a bit of a bombshell. Quote, one thing that has nothing to do with Discovery is that I'm working on another Star Trek project, but I can't discuss that either. And that's all we got out of that.
Not much of a story or an interview.
Well, I mean, they certainly weren't asking him about that, he kind of just dropped it.
Oh, okay.
And he wouldn't follow up on it. You know, it's like, well, don't drop that if you can't pay
right,
off.
Right.
You know, no hints. So they did try to follow up saying, are we talking more feature films? Because as far as I know, there was only one television project, I assume.
It could be a board game. It could be a doll collection. We don't know.
Yeah. A new series of plates.
Christmas ornaments.
I mean, it could be novels. It could be he's doing some polishing work on the next movie or consulting on that. It could be for another theme park project. It could be, you know, that's so wide open. I mean, I think that, you know, Nick's niche is definitely working on visual Star Trek. So I don't think it would be I don't think it's anything other than film or television, but there's only two possibilities. Well, unless we have Star Trek, the animated series part two, I suppose we could be doing that. Mm. All we know
with the, Christopher Pine and Zachary Quinto characters as the animated characters.
He could also be working on a comic, I suppose, as well, a graphic novel of something. So when we're going to hear more about this, I don't know.
Stay tuned. We'll break the news first.
Because it needs to be broken. And then we'll put it back together again, so don't worry about it. We'll leave it the way we found it.
Because around here, the topic is Trek.
That's right.
Take a drink.
And I think that takes us to the end of our news.
Yes.
So now we're headed on to our main mission. It's time for us to head out on our main mission, where we take a Z-minus 10,000 meters dive into one subject and try to stay on course. That's the tricky part. So our topic this time around is, now that Star Trek Discovery has an official air date, are we excited? Anxious? What are we looking for in Star Trek Discovery? So I'm going to toss over for your first thoughts, Chuck, on... You know, we're less than 90 days away from the premiere of this thing.
Uh-huh.
We know precious little about it.
Uh-huh. Kind of like the healthcare bill that the Republicans did.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, did I get political again?
You did, but remember the topic is Trek.
I'll try to remember that.
What are you hoping for or anxious about with the new show?
I think I've got a little bit of anxiety because every time we're really hungry for a property like this, a la Star Wars, sometimes we don't always get the best product. So I do enter into this with some cautious optimism. I am excited that we'll have some Star Trek back on the tube. And what am I hoping for? I think I alluded to that earlier. I want that. The current events in the Star Trek universe portrayed to make the people think about what's going on. Is this the right thing? How are we approaching this? Maybe take a different viewpoint, or at least consider a different viewpoint. That's the stuff I love.
Yeah. To me, the thing I'm most anxious, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I will definitely get CBS All Access when the show premieres, because I want it. They'll be releasing weekly, so I want to be able to see them as they come out. Even if I wasn't doing the show, I'd want to be seeing these things as they came out. The thing I'm a little anxious about is the same thing I'm anxious about when any new Star Trek series comes out, is, and having done a project last year for the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, where I was pretty much watching all of Star Trek,
right,
everything. What you find almost consistently, and to me, I find the original series is the only exception to this, is that it takes them a while to get their footing on what the note is they want to hit.
And that's the cautious part, because Hollywood seems to be very short-sighted on shows and has a propensity to cancel good shows or or potentially good shows after one season because they, you know, they're just reaching that stride. We've seen this time and time again. Firefly. there's a rich universe out there. Now, maybe Star Trek gets a pass on that so that, you know, you can build that out. But you're right. History has taught us, even in the Star Trek universe, that season one may not be a good indicator of what's to come. Hopefully, right. Hopefully we can dodge that bullet and they're already aware of that shortcoming.
Right. My concern watching the trailer, which I believe is mostly showing us things from the pilot, is that it's going to be one of these cases where we'll have the big mystery or the big event, and you have to wait forever for that to play out. And that is not always a good thing, because that original thought that the writers in the writers' room are having with the creation of this thing, suddenly the show drifts from that, because that's not the interesting thing anymore. The interesting thing is this shiny thing over here.
Yeah.
And you never get the payoff of what that thing was. It just kind of evaporates off to the side. I feel like really Voyager, one of the problems that I had with Voyager is that you have this great setup. You do this whole thing where they are thrown across the galaxy. And then week to week, you really felt like, well, they're just in another part of, you know, the Federation. They're running into the alien of the week, and this happens and that happens. And then the last episode, oh, that's right, we need to get back. And they get back and they arrive at Earth, and the shot of Voyager return to Earth is about the last 30 seconds of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think you lost the point of this whole thing. I've always said that my opinion, and I know it was not done this way because of budgetary reasons, is that what I wanted to happen to Voyager over the 7 years was that because you couldn't get replacement parts for a starship, you had to make do with whatever you came across.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time Voyager got back to Earth,
it looked like a Mad Max vehicle.
Voyager, right. Yeah. That it had a warp core from this and a section on top of there.
Duct tape around the nacelles. Yeah, the whole thing.
Exactly. So it's that shiny vision of Star Trek that I think, in addition to the fact that they didn't want to keep updating all their stock shots all the time, but it just kind of stayed one way, and I really think it should have gone another. That's my opinion anyway about that. But the point is that if you start off someplace, it needs to be strong enough and interesting enough, yep, that it's really going to be that thing that keeps going. And I don't know whether these Klingons that we're seeing that don't look like Klingons we've seen before.
Maybe they're a different subspecies of Klingon.
It's possible. I think that it's great to chart your own course, to not have everything look the same as the other series. That's fine. Although I do have some issues with some of that stuff. the way some of the costumes are looking, and the displays on the ships and the ships themselves, is kind of like, and this is 10 years before the series.
From a cinematic approach, I kind of get it.
Right.
Marvel movies look different in one generation than they do in the other. Look how many times Spider-Man has changed.
Right. But in the same sense, you look at, I never had a problem with, the Kelvin timeline with the JJ verse, look, I didn't mind that the Enterprise looked different, but there were a lot of things that you could definitely say, yes, this is Star Trek. Not only the characters, but visual cues, down to the fact that they wore the red, the blue, and the gold, and not all the time.
Right.
So we may not have seen shots yet. And I do, prefaces by saying that we've only mostly seen stuff from the pilot.
And you know what? So, there may be an origin story in some of those artifacts. That they had coloration on Enterprise. They were mainly the blue jumpsuits, but they did have the red accents or the gold accents. So I wasn't looking close enough to see if the uniforms had that tie-in.
They have it, but in a very weird way.
Okay.
The tie-in in color is that the insignias, which is another point that I sound like, oh, stop, you're nitpicking to death. Well, I'm going by what I'm seeing, and I want to preface this by saying, as I said up front, I'm going to buy CBS All Access. I'm looking forward to it. But there are questions, and kind of when you only see certain things, it leads you to have questions and go, well, I'll want to see what happens, but I'm... So the color, everyone has the Delta Shield. The Delta Shields are either gold, silver, or bronze.
So they're in the Olympics.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, well, gold and bronze are really not that far off from each other.
Yeah.
So you're always going to be able to tell which is gold and which is bronze. Now, they do have the three insignias, the star and the gear and, you know, the medical. So they do have those on the Delta Shield. So you do have that other portion. This is a tie-in. I'm anxious to find out how this all works together, because the producers do keep saying that, yes, it is the prime timeline. Yes, it does fit in 10 years before, you know, and all these things. So this is what I'm anxious to find out. So it's not anxious that I think it's bad. I'm anxious to find out how does that fit in? Is there time travel involved? Which I really wouldn't have a problem with, because that's a Trek canon as well. But how does it fit in?
And it could be that we just have to suspend disbelief until the show takes hold.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't want this to turn into another, you remember the first few episodes of Next Generation, people were doing a lot of comparison and contrast, and it really was its own show. So I'm thinking this may have to be given some latitude as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, like I said, I hate to make it sound like, oh, this guy's not going to like the show right off the bat. No, it's not that. It's just that I look at what I can see and I hear what I can hear. And I'm going, it seems weird, but I want to see it.
Right.
And I want to see what goes on. And I'm, you know, excited to have it happen, just like I'm excited for whatever the next movie is, whether or not, you know, Kirk's dad is back in it or not, whatever the case is. I'm anxious to see it. I'm always anxious to see the next thing. So I want to definitely see this and talk about it and analyze it and have fun with it. And, you know, hope that there's a lot of things like the humor we talked about that hopefully, you know, by bringing people like Jonathan Frakes into the mix, people can play off of that and, you know, kind of pick his brain as well about things and get it, you know, everything develops its tone, and him working on it is one of those things in a very early episode. I'm assuming it might be a mid-season episode, but your tone changes over time in your show as all the pieces mesh together and want to see how that all works out. I'm also hoping that we see lots of aliens and lots of, if the budget is that high and the production values are up there, that we can now get beyond, in television, the little ridge on the nose alien.
The what I saw on the trailer looked pretty impressive. At least there was the crew member who said, my species has been bred to detect when death is nearby. I don't know what that race was, but the makeup job on that looked pretty darn good. And I'm hoping we see more of that.
Definitely. And so that's, I think, you know, it's as we talk about the production values on television, kind of going to that bar of almost movie quality, that's one of the things that Trek on television, and to some extent the movies, but certainly in television, never had the budget to go beyond very simple appliances.
Mm-hmm.
And with a shorter season and a big budget, I'm looking forward to seeing you know, a lot of different species in here. Some familiar. And I loved on Enterprise when the Andorians actually had their antenna move. I mean, that's the type of thing you can take something that's classic and update it, plussing it, like making it better, making it more intriguing. And
like the bots on MST3K. Their arms
exactly.
move.
Exactly. Now their hands move. And then and Tom Servo flies now. Just how does that work? It's kind of like R2-D2. He didn't realize he could fly until that point.
Whoa, what are these rockets? Wait, so we just crossed the topic is Trek. Let's get back.
Oh, that's right. The topic is, well, one of the things that I was reading about was that they were going to be breaking one of Gene's cardinal rules for Star Trek. And I was
money,
right? No. This is, well, that money thing, you can find plenty of examples where they actually use money, but this is Gene's rule, which really didn't kick in until The Next Generation, about not having conflict between the crew members. You know, that people, it should be far enough advanced that you don't have that level of conflict. And
no,
the writers of The Next Generation early on said this, that is storytelling. Storytelling is conflict.
Yeah.
And after Gene was no longer involved, for various reasons, they added more internal conflict, and certainly Deep Space Nine took that to a next level.
Yep.
You can still have the shiny future, but have conflict in it.
I'm really surprised we didn't see more of that in Voyager 2. I mean, we originally had,
the Maquis.
We're after the Maquis, and we're going to have to work together. But that was about the end of the crew conflict. I'm thinking, you're trapped together for years. You're not all going to get along like peaches and cream forever.
Right.
At some point, you're going to have to dump someone on a planet and say, you're off the ship.
That's right. Aurora Pente, you're off with you. Well, that's, again, that's that same thing, that the pilot, the first episode, sets up a lot of things that just seem to get forgotten as they went along. So if you're doing something, do it. And I have no problem with there being conflict among the crew. I mean, it shouldn't come to fisticuffs or that type of thing on a weekly basis. And I think you can take that to the extreme of, say, a Battlestar Galactica, where pretty much everyone hated and was shooting at everybody else at one point or another. And I think we'll come back a bit from that far with conflict, but still have something. Then it can resolve itself either within the episode or within a mini arc or something else. But conflict is fine. So I think overall, we're saying that we're very much looking forward to it, but that we're just really anxious because we haven't seen it yet. And what is it? And how are things going to play out? And what is the story? To me, that's like, what is the story of this show? We don't know that yet.
What is the major plot that we're after?
It's good and bad, right? I mean, it's good not to know everything ahead of time, but it's also frustrating that you don't know everything ahead of time.
Is there a wormhole involved, or are we trapped in the Delta Quadrant?
All I know is that Wash dies. That's all. Oh, I'm sorry. The topic is Trek.
Let's get into our final segment as we wind this down.
All right. So our final section is what we like to call our warp speed roundtable, which is one rapid fire topic. And this time around, we're going to do something we call airlock or shuttle.
You are in error. You are a biological unit. You are imperfect.
Wait for it. Wait for it.
Nomad, there's something I've got to tell you. You are in error. So I'm going to name a character, and we're each going to take a turn saying whether or not we think this character deserves a shuttle pod or whether they should be shown to the airlock, if you know what I mean. And then you can quickly justify why you think that. So our topic this time around, our subject for Airlock or Shuttle Pod is Armory Officer Lieutenant Malcolm Reed from Star Trek Enterprise.
Okay.
Chuck.
Oh, you're going to throw this in my face, are you?
I'm going to ask you.
You want
Lieutenant
the
Reed.
You want the quick answer and then my justification?
Yes.
I give him the airlock.
Okay. And why?
Why? He just didn't strike me as a key performer, a key character. He just came across flat in my mind. There wasn't anything memorable. In fact, when you put this on the show notes, I went, I got to read up on it because I don't remember a whole lot. He didn't make an impression.
Well, in contrast, I'm going to say that he deserves to be shown to the airlock.
That's a contrast.
Well, I said it differently.
Would you use the first airlock or the second one?
That's right. We open both doors and out he goes. To me, the problem with the character is that he was always ready to just kind of say, no, you go, I'll sacrifice myself. That's fine. I've got a death wish. I'm just going to go do this and you leave me behind. It's kind of like the person that when they're running away and he falls down and he says, go on without me. You want people to just, yeah, okay, great. We'll go on without you because, man, you're just like bringing us down.
And some of that may have come up from his history. I mean, the character's history.
Right.
He wanted to follow his lineage in the Navy, but he had aquaphobia, so he couldn't go into the Navy. So he went into Starfleet, but he didn't tell his parents that he was going into Starfleet. So there was this, should he be here? Does he fit in kind of thing? And maybe that's why he was always willing to throw himself on the grenade for him.
Yeah. But I mean, it seemed like the point, it wasn't just throwing himself on the grenade. It was kind of like, I'll throw myself on the grenade. Reed, there's no grenade. Okay,
so I'll pull a pin and fall on one.
Yeah, I'll pull the pin on my own. It's like he just seemed like such a sad sack. And I'm thinking he's in charge of when they brought the Makos on board, it's like a case of, can we just have the Mako people? Because, they're much more cool and seem to be, doing the right thing or. So I don't know. I say airlock.
We're gonna nickname him Eeyore.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Nobody I guess I'll go on this away mission.
Guess so I'll go out the airlock.
Now, if we had three people and we had, but we no problem this time around.
Yeah, no majority.
And that's our show. So we're ready to hit the theme, boys.
It's inspirational, isn't it?
It is. Now, if you want to stay in touch with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or you can visit thetopicistrek.com.
It's a little thin right now on content, seeing as this is our first show, but we will put more stuff up there in the news stories that we find during the weeks and months ahead. So we hope to join you there. We'll also work on getting a voice line set up, so You're in on the ground floor on this one, people.
That's right. We'll also set up some sort of email, perhaps, or something. So, all that rage you're feeling about my ranting about Discovery, we'll find some way for you to get that to us.
We're also going to work on the timing of this outro. Sign them off, sir.
All right. Warp speed ahead.